Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Thursday, February 19th. Anderson?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
DeCaria?
Here.
Dockstader?
Excused.
Esquibel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Honeycutt?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Larson?
Here.
Martin?
Excused.
Massey?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Nicholas?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Here.
Schiffer? Scott,
here.
Sessions,
here.
Townsend,
here.
Vasey,
here.
Von Platern,
here.
President Hines,
here.
Bebout,
here.
Okay. 28 present, 2 excused.
Prayer by Reverend Robinson.
Is it not on? There we are. Good morning. Let's pray. God of honor and glory, we bow before you, acknowledging that you alone are God, and to you we give praise. May all our work please you. God of creative possibilities, you created once, and you continue to create, inviting us to walk alongside you. May all we touch testify to your presence. God of infinite wisdom, we bow before you, seeking your guidance for the work of these people, chosen to be representatives and leaders of many. God of radical grace, we ask that your grace open all our hearts, flood all our minds, and light our paths. We pray that your grace might sufficiently fill us with all you see that we need, so that we may be part of what you are doing in our lives, in our community, in our world. God of us all, we bow before you in our need and to your holiness. In your mercy, hear our prayer. Amen.
Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports at the journal of February the 18th, 2009. Has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day is Tom Radosevich, MD from Casper. And the nurse for the day is Mary K. Goeter, Wyoming State Board of Nursing. Thought for the day, if at first you don't succeed, find out if the losers get anything. Messages from the House.
February the 18th, from the House of Representatives, message number 332, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 8. The House conferees are Representative Teeters, Chairman, Representatives Gilmore and Wallace. February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 333, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 21. The House conferees are Representative Landon, Chairman, Representative Stewart and Stubson. February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 334, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 61. The House conferees are Representative Gingery, Chairman, Representative Qualberg and Throne. February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 335, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 86. The House conferees are Representative Stubson, Chairman, Representative Brechtel and Millen. February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 336, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 117. The House conferees are Representative Landon, Chairman, Representative Hallinan and Shepperson. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. You want these back?
Reports from standing committees.
February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 295, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 7, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 47, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 46, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senator Nicholas, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 96, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 229, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senators Meyer and Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 19th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 279, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott. No, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 19th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 125, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
House Bill 114 came out of committee number 4 yesterday. This is on the Community College Amendments. Does have an appropriation request to be re-referred to committee number 2.
Without objections, House Bill 114 will be re-referred to committee number 2, Appropriations. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 295 contains an appropriation, and I would ask that it be re-referred to Appropriations.
Without objection, House Bill 295 will be referred to committee number 2, Appropriations. Bills on second reading. House Bill 8, second reading of the bill.
Certified Public Accountants Revisions.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, yesterday the good senator from Fremont County, who sits just in front of me, asked a question on House Bill 8 about being able to renew your license as a CPA in case you missed the cutoff date. Received an answer from the board, and I'll just give you a couple sentences. It says, regulations specify that expired certificates may be activated upon application, payment of fees, and compliance with other requirements. Essentially, if a person does not renew by the deadline, he or she can activate it at any time by submitting the application, paying the fees to include the late fees, and showing compliance with the continuing professional education. Thank you, Mr. President.
House Bill 8 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 38, second reading of the House bill.
This one here for governmental entities.
There is an amendment.
Oh, it's on now.
Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
House Bill 38, second reading, amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 11.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, this is regards to the House Bill 38. I'd like to move second reading amendment number 1. And, Mr. Chairman, this just corrects a reference with respect to recall this is the fiscal year for governmental entities, and I'm carrying the water for the good former chairman of that select committee, but I'll do the best I can to stumble through this. But, Mr. Chairman, the reference that was in the bill to B is the reference for hospital districts, and it really should be C because everything that the change here is for municipalities. So this is just cleanup. It was brought to us by the LSO, and I realize these kind of things are very controversial, but I just hope we can get through this.
Second reading, amendment number 1 to House Bill 38. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. House Bill 38, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 51, second reading of the House bill.
Handicapped motorcycle plates.
House Bill 51, having been read 2 separate times, hearing no objection. The question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 60, second reading of the House bill.
Sex offenses by corrections personnel.
House Bill 60, having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 72, second reading of the House bill.
County jails, release of information.
House Bill 72, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 74, second reading of the House bill.
House Bill 74, Water and Sewer Districts Maps.
House Bill 74, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 76, second reading of the House bill.
Election Code Revisions.
House Bill 76, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 78, second reading of the House bill.
Improvement and Service Districts.
House Bill 78, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 79, second reading of the House bill.
Mortgages, redemption period.
House Bill 79, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 106, second reading of the House bill.
Firearm ownership, domestic violence offenses.
House Bill 106, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 113, second reading of the House bill.
Careless driving.
House Bill 113, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 119, second reading of the House bill.
Genetic and metabolic disease programs.
House Bill 119, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 135, second reading of the House bill.
Recreational Safety Act amendments.
House Bill 135, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 137, second reading of the House bill.
Videotape depositions, minors.
House Bill 137, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 138, second reading of the House bill.
Property tax refund program.
House Bill 138, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 150, second reading of the House bill.
Peace officer definition.
House Bill 150, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 155, second reading of the House bill.
Higher education matching funds.
House Bill 155, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 164, second reading of the House bill.
Prescription drug fraud felony.
House Bill 164, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 182, second reading of the bill.
Low-profit limited liability companies.
House Bill 182, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 221, second reading of the House bill.
Property tax appeals to.
House Bill 221, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 223, second reading of the House bill.
bullying prevention.
There is an amendment. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
House Bill 223, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy. Delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this amendment does is distills this 8 or 9 page bill down into 8 page bill down into just a single sentence in its essence, and just gives us. If you look at the amendment, looks very complicated, but I can tell you exactly what it does here. If you'll turn to page 4 and go to line 4, the bill would now, the section 1 of the bill would now read, not later than December 31st, 2009, each school district shall adopt a policy prohibiting harassment, intimidation, or bullying at school and provide a copy of the policy to the Department of Education. So ultimately, the bill gets, section 1 of the bill is now reduced into its essence. The one page, which the one sentence that tells them to do the bullying policy and get it into the department. The reason for this is simply this. Ultimately, this is a long statement that, in my view, holds a lot of things that ought to be in rule and regulation. In addition, I, like some of the other senators in here, hold out a hope that there's a last vestige of local control. And so ultimately what we do is, for those departments that have, or those school districts that have bullying policies in effect, they simply would have to potentially look at those and send them into the department. Those schools that don't have a bullying harassment policy need to get one and get into the department. Those school boards are elected by the same voters that elect us, and I would anticipate that every school district should have a bullying policy, and we ought to be looking out for those things. And ultimately, each school district should, in its own way and under its own circumstances, figure out what's the right policy, and get the parents to support it, and to get the board to support it, and put it in place. And other than that, I don't have anything else to say about it, Mr. President. I urge your favorable consideration.
Would you move the amendment, please?
Oh, thank you. I'll move, move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 223.
Thank you. Senator Cove.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, we had a lengthy discussion yesterday. A good discussion. And like I said yesterday, and a number of others said, 2 years ago I probably wouldn't be supporting this. The new stuff that's come up, like we talked about yesterday, is significant stuff. Now, probably 95% of the districts out there, and I'm guessing at that, probably already have this type of policy on the books. They aren't enforcing it. Now we're going to solve that and say, now they all have to have one for sure and send it to the Department of Ed. Is that going to solve the problem? No. Problem's still out there. Email this morning I got from Douglas, and I'm not going to say who, obviously. Please support the bullying bill. We have real problems with this issue in Douglas, and the local school board doesn't seem to have the courage to deal with it. I think that says it all. This amendment doesn't change much of that. This amendment doesn't have a lot of impact on that. And I will say the good sponsor of the amendment I talked about, and he came to me first yesterday, and I appreciate that. But I'm telling you that I think bullying, harassment, intimidation today is real out there. I think we need to defeat this amendment, leave the bill as it is, put some teeth into it, go out and say this is a serious, serious problem that is impacting learning. I had an email a couple of days ago from a lady that said, my daughter goes out of the house in the morning to school in tears a lot of mornings, fearful of what's going to happen to her at school. It is out there. It's in the small districts, the medium-sized districts, the large districts. Some districts are dealing with it better than others. Some aren't dealing with it at all. Somehow we have to recognize that learning out there, this is impacting learning in some of our kids. It's slowing them down. And it's a real issue. It's a significant issue. Urge that you defeat the amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'd urge you to support the amendment. You know, folks, the and I agree with everything that the gentleman from Cody is articulated with respect to our no tolerance for bullying, that it ought to be addressed, that it's an important issue. Having said all that, to suggest that bullying is of such a magnitude that it requires 8 pages of text and direction not only to the school boards, you shall have rules and regulations, but they have to be this way, you have to enforce it. And then I would draw your attention to page 3 at the bottom, where it says, no person shall engage in harassment, intimidation, or bullying, reprisal, etc. You know, the notion that you just create a statute that's almost criminal in nature without a criminal requirement, and just saying we're going to make a statute that says you shall not engage in this, and is a bit on the side of overstating the problem. I mean, in any given day, if you're a parent, you're going to see your kids, one brother bullying the other sister, bullying her brother. And I suppose you could put this statement up on the wall and says, none of our kids shall engage in this. But it is more complicated than that. Human nature is more complex. And, you know, last night I spoke with my wife, who's a teacher, and I said, do you have a bullying policy? She said, I don't know. But it's a fact of life. We deal with it. We think we know how to deal with it. We get trained on it. It's important to us. And, you know, any teacher that's a parent probably has learned over time how you deal with bullying issues. You learn it over time. It has to be addressed. And we should require at this day and age that there be regulations. But school boards are perfectly competent and capable of doing the regulations without being told right down to the level of this. Look at all the other regulations that we put in statute, and we simply say, you go out, you go through the administrative process, go under Title 16, Section 4, the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act, you follow the rulemaking process, and we're confident that if you go through public hearings in Douglas or anywhere else, that you will come to the right result. And folks, if it doesn't happen in 2 or 3 years, then you go back. But where is the old issue about local control? Have we just disappeared, that people are incapable at the local level? School boards that are elected by people are incapable of adopting their own policies without being told by 8 pages how it is. There are other policies that schools do, anti-discrimination, anti-harassment, that have one sentence, you will have a policy. And those are far more complicated than these procedures. When I hear the issue about, well, bullying takes parents, and I see these parents writing in, I reminded when I'm involved in legal matters. And I'll tell you that for the parent that that has a child that's the victim of this, and the school board addresses it, almost never do you satisfy that parent that the right thing is being done unless you take the bully out and ship him to another state. And that's not going to happen. And those parents oftentimes do overstate the issue. There are oftentimes more complicated issues. We can solve this problem with a one-sentence statement. Adopt a bullying policy. That's all it takes.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm inclined to support this amendment. And the reason is this amendment boils the bill down to the only thing that I can see the bill does on this whole issue. I could be persuaded to oppose it if the opponents of the amendment could demonstrate something else in the bill that specifically will result, get something done and result in a reduction in the problem. You know, and you take this piece that was just cited at the bottom of page 3. It's a nice statement of policy. But talk about a gummer. It doesn't do anything. And I think that nobody is arguing with the statement of the seriousness of the problem. The question is, what does this bill do about it? And with this amendment, it's very clear what the bill does about it. And I can't find anything else in here that it does about it.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. We heard the point of, gee, if this doesn't work, maybe 2 or 3 years, let's come back and see if we can do something different. If the amendment were to pass and just simply asking them to put a policy into place doesn't work, let's come back in 2 or 3 years and we'll do something different. We've been back 2 or 3 years. This issue was first raised many, many years ago with what happened down in Colorado, and found out that those kids down there were precipitated by bullying, and then how the evidence of bullying has influenced kids since then. This bill has been in front of us several times, and the argument for getting rid of it and doing the very thing that this amendment says is let the school districts do it, they can handle it. It's not getting better. Every piece of evidence indicates that it's only getting worse, and especially when you add electronic means into it, there's a great deal of harassment and bullying that's occurring. The school district boards, in many instances, aren't able to get on top of this. That's the reason for this bill, and it's a measured approach. It provides a basic foundation and definitions for school districts to build upon. It provides a uniform approach in order to deal with a situation that's undermining and hampering education for an awful lot of our kids out there. And with regard to process, the process that's set up on pages 4 and 5 is just that. It indicates what happens when these instances occur, who it needs to be reported to. And with that type of a process in place, then school boards are able to have the flexibility and decide how they're going to deal with it. But this just simply sets some standardization indicating this is a problem, it's not going away, it's been in front of us for an awful long time, and we do believe in quality education for our children. And this is something that's getting underway. Take care of it.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I find myself agreeing with the tall senator from Laramie. If we take this bill down with this amendment and we say adopt a bullying policy, then schools can step out and say, our school policy is thou shalt not bully. There's your policy. The face of bullies have changed over the years. When a lot of us were in school, it was the big tough kids picking on the little kids. And the schools went to great measures to stop that practice. And they may have even gone a little too far with it, because now a lot of your bullying is not, well, it's very little of it is the big kids picking on the little kids anymore. It's groups of kids. And it could be a group of kids that bombard another child on their emails and on their text messages, and then they harass them at school. And there are kids that are not wanting to go to school because of what's going on there. We've tried over the years. The senator from Laramie is right. This is not the first time that we've seen this, and we're going to see it over and over again until we can figure out how to do something to give the districts direction on how to develop these policies. They have to be developed. If you continue on the route that we are and you boil it down to what we have here in this amendment, we're going to be back again and again and again, and we're not going to do anything constructive out of here to help the districts to address it. One of the things that this does, once all the districts have it, is we have that parent liaison in the state education department. Once you have this process in place in the district, if it's not working, then they can go to that liaison. Right now, if they don't have this policy in place and you go to that liaison, the liaison is going to say, well, does your district have a bully procedure and process? Well, no. Well, that's what you need to do first. We need to take this step. We've gone from criminalization down to just, would you do it? The committee has asked the education department to do it, you know, to do the survey. It's not being done in a lot of the districts. This is the nudge that directs them in the right direction. I'd hope you defeat the amendment and support the bill.
Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. And I would say that I've agreed with most everything that's been said in regard to the importance of the bill and the significance of the bill. I do support the bill in its current form. I think if you were to add the amendment, you'd get the same expression, you get same old, same old. That's where we're at now. We've told the schools in the past to a bullying policy. And this is the result, that this is the point that it brings us to. So to pass the amendment is just a repeat of the current statement. Bullying, in my opinion, after having spent some 30 years in the classroom, is probably the most harmful and the most damaging thing that goes on in our schools. And I'm not prone to use inflammatory statements on the floor and whatnot, but I'm going to say it. It's probably our school's most dirty little secret. It goes on constantly. It goes on more now, subversively, through the, you know, back in the old days, it was pretty much physical, it was pretty much eye to eye, it was pretty much up front. It was pretty much settled in the alley, it was pretty much settled under the bleachers, it was pretty much settled after school. But now it's gone till these things pass by text messaging, passes over the phone, passes over the internet. Imagine for a minute that you were mandated to be in this room. It was compulsory for you to attend this room. And it went on in here daily. It went on over your computers and it went on daily. Things that were derogatory to your character, things that were derogatory to your sexual orientation, things that were damaging and harmful to a growing and emerging self-concept, and it went on daily, and you're trapped. That's the climate that you were required to live in until you were 17 years old or allowed to graduate or old enough to leave these chambers. That's the pressure cooker that you were kept in. That's the thing that you had to go home daily and try to explain to your parents. That's the kind of thing that precipitated and prompted the thing that happened at Columbine. Continued to live in that environment until the only thing that they knew, and that's not to defend the action, that's not to defend the participants, but all some of these kids know to do is to bring some sort of weapon or can do some act of violence to act out and say, for heaven's sakes, notice me. Pay attention to me and what's going on. And it's vicious and it goes on daily. And so, you know, there's some things that, like I say, that are closer to the bone. Closer to the bone are those things that hurt. They hurt and they hurt deeply. And these things that these children go through daily, and believe me, my granddaughter has experienced this too because she's somewhat different. She's ADHD and she views the world somewhat differently. But that's the kind of thing that it's brought to her. And she's now 14 years old and her view of the world is different. Not so much by the genetics, but by the exposure of the environment that day after day after day after day that says you're wrong. You're different. You're not one of us. You're not entitled to be a member of the human race. That's the kind of thing that we're exposing our children to. So ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you that if it does take 7 additional pages of paper in order to put that message out there, let's invest in 7 pages of paper in order to say to those people as clearly as possible, enough is enough for these children. We can't remediate. Why do you think so many children drop out of school? We talk every day about our dropout rate, and we haven't drilled deeply enough yet to identify all the reasons. Here's one of them right here. And I can go on and I can go on.
30 seconds.
Thank you. I think that you should defeat this amendment, pass the bill.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question being called for. The question, second reading, amendment number 1 to House Bill 223, All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment has failed. House Bill 223, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senator Von Vleteren.
May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Fellow senators in the North Balcony, we have employees of one of Wyoming's premier energy companies, Devon Energy. Representing the many towns that Devon Energy has a presence in are employees from Riverton, Warland, Gillette, and Bags, as well as several managers from their Oklahoma City office. Would the Senate please welcome them?
Welcome to the Wyoming Senate. Glad to have you here today. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Yes, Mr. President, we do have a consent list. The consent list for today is as follows. House Bill 2, Street Rods and Custom Vehicles. House Bill 6, Game and Fish Trapping. House Bill 10, Subdivisions Requirements, Substitute Number 1. House Bill 16, Cottage and Food Industry. House Bill 22, Qualifications for Veterans Tax Exemption. House Bill 26, Circuit Court Magistrate Jurisdiction. House Bill 35, Election Judges. House Bill 48, Game Bird Farms Raising Sage Grouse. House Bill 58, Responsibilities of Injectors and Pore Space Owners. House Bill 75, Subdivisions Water Supply Study. House Bill 80, Sequestration Site Utilization, Unitization. House Bill 90, Wind River Reservation Education Programs. And finally, House Bill 165, Adult Adoption.
The consent list today is House Bill 2, Street Rods and Custom Vehicles, House Bill 6, Game and Fish Trapping, House Bill 10, Subdivision Requirements, Substitute Number 1, House Bill 16, Cottage Food Industry, House Bill 22, Qualifications for Veteran Tax Exemption, House Bill 26, Circuit Court Magistrate Jurisdiction, House Bill 35, Election Judges, House Bill 48, Game Bird Farm Raising Sage Grouse, House Bill 58, Responsibilities of Injectors and Pore Space Owners, House Bill 75, Subdivision Water Supply Study, House Bill 80, Sequestration Site Utilization, House Bill 90, Wind River Reservation Education Programs, and House Bill 165, Adult Adoption. Does anyone wish to have any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 2, House Bill 6, House Bill 10, House Bill 16, House Bill 22, House Bill 26, House Bill 35, House Bill 48, House Bill 58, House Bill 75, House Bill 80, House Bill 90, and House Bill 165. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper. DeCaria. Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Schiffer, aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Vleteren,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. House Bill 2, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Ross, aye to no. Larson, aye to no. Von Flatiron, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 20 ayes, 10 noes. House Bill 6, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes. House Bill 10, are there any changes? Sessions, aye to no. Vasey, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Larson, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 22 ayes, 8 noes. House Bill 16. Are there any changes? Massey, aye to no. Honeycutt, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes. House Bill 22. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes. House Bill 26. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 26. 30 ayes. House Bill 35. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes. House Bill 48. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes. House Bill 58, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes. House Bill 75, are there any changes? Perkins, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes. House Bill 80. Are there any changes? Perkins, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Jennings, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Vasey, I to know. Coe, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes. House Bill 90, are there any changes? Jennings, I to know. Geis, I to know. Landon, I to know. Honeycutt, I to know. Dockstader, I to know. Anderson, I to know. Coe, I to know. Sessions, I to know. Larson, I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 21 ayes, 9 noes. House Bill 165. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 2, House Bill 6, House Bill 10, House Bill 16, House Bill 22, House Bill 26, House Bill 35, House Bill 48, House Bill 58, House Bill 75, House Bill 80, House Bill 90, and House Bill 165 have passed the Senate. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are that order of business. Considerations of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Martin.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 251. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 251, sponsored by Representative Gingery, Trust, Retirement Funds Accounting, and Act Relating to Trusts. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report. It do so with the do pass recommendation on House Bill 251, Trust Retirement Fund Accounting, and to explain this bill, I'd like to call on Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 251 has to do with, is a patch for something that's happened that unfortunately creates an adverse consequence with the Internal Revenue Service for a number of our citizens here in Wyoming. Just a little bit of background. In 1997, there was a Uniform Act developed. It was adopted by Wyoming in 1997. It was developed in 2001. Wyoming adopted it. That is the Uniform Income and Principal Act. In 2006, and what that did, if you look at the beginning, if you look in the bill, ultimately what happens is you have what we're talking about here are trust funds, and when you have a separate fund that's involved in a trust fund. And while what you need to think about that is ultimately you may have a separate fund that's going to be something like an annuity or an IRA or something like that. And the beneficiary of that annuity or IRA is a trust. And so what you have is a separate fund who's dumping occasional periodic payments, whether they're required minimum distributions out of your IRA or annual distributions or other monthly distributions from the annuity that go into the trust. And so that's what you're dealing with. So that's what the separate fund concept is you've got something that's paying over money periodically to a trust. And what happened in the original Income and Principal Act is it said as these payments would come in, if there's a designation, you have to figure out what's income, because ultimately you've got to report that on your tax return to the federal government. And you have to figure out what's income. And we had a provision in it that said basically if you didn't know what the income was, it wasn't reported to you by whoever was the custodian of the IRA or the annuity, that you would just simply say that 10% of the payment was income and 90% of the payment was return of principal. And you would move forward. What happened with that was in 2006, we, along with another number of other states, had passed that law. There was an adverse revenue ruling by the Internal Revenue Service that said that they would not recognize that and ultimately potentially disqualifies all of the trusts that have these separate funds that would do that. The reason why that's important is that it goes into what's called a marital deduction, and what that means is when you die, Uncle Sam will charge you money if you leave more than a certain amount of money to your family. The exception to that is your spouse. You can always leave an unlimited amount of money to your spouse. And what this potentially did when you had these is you disqualify the advantage of having that unlimited amount of money that you can pass to your spouse, so that together you can pass on twice as much as you could to your heirs without incurring estate tax. So what this bill does is it simply comes back and it looks at that, and there was a patch that's developed by the NACUSL folks to fix this. And 2 years ago, we adopted, kind of bootstraps on a safe harbor the IRS allowed states to create that we adopted 2 years ago, which says when you have a unit trust situation, ultimately if the percentage that's paid out is between 3 and 5%, you're going to be in a safe harbor with the Internal Revenue Service. So what this bill does, it goes back and adopts and uses kind of bootstraps that to something that will fix the problem that we have. I'll take you through the bill, and what it does very quickly is if you go to page 3, you see at the beginning of the language we're talking about that. We're going to talk about separate funds that pay into trusts. If you go to page, the heart of the bill begins on page 4, 19 through 13. And what that says is when these separate payments come in, if the person who pays it tells you what the income is, and that's the income to the trust. If that's not available, then you look at the value of the trust and you apply a 3% figure to that, and that will be that 3% figure will come in, which bootstraps from the one we did a couple years ago, and that will then be the income to the trust, 3% a year, and the rest will be principal. And if you can't do that, then you'll go to and do a net present value on the assets from the payments that you receive, and you'll divide that up between income and principal in that regard. And so all this does is just create that. It's a patch that we believe that the experts that work on this believe will fix and solve that problem, so that we'll be back in compliance with IRS for people who have to take advantage of our Uniform Income and Principal Act. And with that tiring and boring explanation, I'll sit down and ask for your favorable consideration.
Any other discussion on House Bill 251? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 251, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 251 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 288. Please read the House Bill.
House Bill number 288, sponsored by Representative Lockhart. Certificate of Authority, High Voltage Transmission Lines, an act relating to utilities. It was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, K. Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 288. And to explain this bill, I'd like to call on Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, House Bill 288 deals with high-voltage transmission lines, and you're all very much aware of the issue in our state with the lack of available space on our high transmission lines to conduct and transport electricity out of the state. Presently, there are two major lines under consideration by a large power producer in our state. What this bill does, Mr. Chairman, it gets into the voltage that's over 230,000 kilovolts. And presently, the Public Service Commission is responsible for certificates of authority for construction of these. On the voltage line that's underneath, under 230,000 kilovolts, they do not have any language that prohibits them from constructing based on the right-of-way. And what we're trying to do with this bill is to change that and allow it to be treated the same for those voltage lines over 230,000 kilovolts. And if you look at the bill, Mr. Chairman, on the bottom of page 1, you can see that we changed the word from shall to may, and we add in a segment of. And if this bill should become law, what it will allow those people to do that are putting in these high-voltage transmission lines to get the right-of-way per segment. And a segment with the PSC is defined as between substations, so they can have right-of-ways on various substations if they're trying to install their voltage line, but they don't have to have the right-of-way for the entire line itself. This is a tool, I think, that will help them be able to build construction lines, be able to get transmission lines moving in our state. I think it's a good move. The PSC has no problem with them doing it because they already are doing it for under the 230 kV, so I would ask for your favorable consideration. Be glad to answer any questions.
Further discussion on House Bill 288? Senator Meyer.
So basically the RAs always had eminent domain on the small lines, and now this is going to allow them to have the same on the large lines, the big towers with that come from the power plants. Is that what we're looking at?
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand your question about the REA, they're really not involved in this unless they would be building a transmission line. And currently, most REA lines would be under the 230 kV. So they are existing, they operate under the existing lines, which says that they do not have to have the right-of-way for everything in order to start construction. What this bill does, it does it for the 230 kV or larger and allows them to be treated the same way.
Senator Cooper.
The little part of the size of the towers or something in there, I'm not quite sure, but the towers actually for a 230 line or a 500 kV line be the same. The only difference is that the insulators would be a little different. They'd be larger and a few more.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just kind of curious if I can get an explanation on so they could permit to build the lines even though they don't have the rest of the right-of-way. So what happens if they don't get the rest of that right-of-way? Do the lines just go to the next substation? And then what happens from there? I'm trying to figure this out in my mind, why that's an advantage to get the permit to build it before you've got the right-of-way.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's a good question. And presently what they do right now in order to be able to proceed with one of these KV, 230 KV or larger lines, they have to have the right-of-way through the entire state. They want to do it by segment so they can get the construction going on segment. Now, if, in fact, three or four segments down the way to get to several different subdivisions or substations, they wouldn't have that particular right-of-way. The process takes 2 or 3 years. That gives them time to be able to do that and secure the right-of-way while they're able to start construction on the other end of it. It's just a tool in terms of timing to allow the construction to proceed in a normal manner. And as I understand it, over the last 5 or 10 years that this has been going on, there has been no problem in terms of getting right-of-way, and they've been able to work with the people that have the surface and the BLM.
Senator DeCaria.
Mr. Chairman,
concern in this process is that you get both sides of the line and there's a property owner that's in between those two. Does that force them into condemnation? Is that the option? It's either you can either sell us the right of way or we're gonna move to condemn the property, because I can't imagine them saying that we're at this point in time and we're gonna go up and around and take kind of a longer route in order to get across if they built both sides and then they only have a place in the middle. So I don't know, can you alleviate any of that concern for me?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just thinking about the question of what next. If you have, I guess, can get it between one substation and another substation, and that's what the bill does, what would prohibit anybody from saying, okay, let's build the next substation over here, and then that gives it authority to move that to the next one, and so you just push one domino, and pretty soon you're just stair-stepped across wherever you need to go.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, to try to answer the questions, the testimony we heard in committee of this has not been an issue, but certainly that situation could occur where you have people in one segment that have the right-of-way in another segment, and there's one person that doesn't. But the testimony presented, that has not been an issue in the smaller lines. The PSC didn't think it would be an issue in the larger lines, but that certainly could happen. And obviously, when it gets to that case, you have litigation and problems, and we all understand what happens in that part of our statutes. Again, the testimony in our committee was this is a tool to allow them to proceed with the construction of these transmission lines. It's segment by segment. They have to have the right-of-way in that particular segment. And if you're down the road in those segments and you have not getting the right-of-way, it's up to them working with the PSA to secure that right-of-way.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And also kind of to add a little bit to the good senator from Fremont County's answer, too, is that there's really economically no reason to skip a segment and go to another one, because the whole idea is to start at the source, increase the KV rating on the line, and move it to the next substation. I mean, if you skip a segment and you build a line out here three segments away that has a 500 KV conductor built onto it, and you're only operating on 230 KV, it'd be crazy economically to even think about spending the money for a 500 KV line out there. Now, you couldn't say, well, maybe down in the future, you know, we're going to add that in there, and hopefully we're going to get this next segment, but you may not never know that. So there's not a whole lot of reason economically to do that. You want to start at the source and build the segments out as you go.
Any other questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 288, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 288 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 100. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 100, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, an act relating to water development projects. It was referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises and report, I move that House Bill 100 do pass. It's your big omnibus water bill. It's good for the economy of Wyoming. We just keep taking care of these water bills. If you have any questions, I have the big blue book. If we pass this bill, what we have left in account one will be $3,988,000. In account two will be $1,888,000. That's for next year's appropriation. And then in account three, $141,967,000 in account three. We'll start off with, and you all have a cheat sheet, I hope, if you haven't lost it, but it's here. And on page 3, statewide water research. This is a contract that the water, Wyoming Water Development has with the University of Wyoming, and whenever we need some projects researched or whatever, why we can go to the University of Wyoming and take money out of this account and contract with the university to do the research for us. On page 3, it'll be the Burns Water Supply, Laramie. These are all brand new phase 1 projects. $85,000 master plan. And the phase 1, phase 2, the water development pays 100% on all these phase 1, phase 2 accounts. Page 3, Douglas Master Water Plan, Converse County, $200,000. Page 3, Glen Rock Master Plan, Converse County, $150,000. Page 3, Green River DSS Feasibility Study, $250,000. That's over, you know, in the southwest of Wyoming over there by Green River and Rock Springs. Page 3, Kirby Creek Watershed Study, Hot Springs County, $150,000. Page 3, Lance Creek Water Supply, Niobrara County, $100,000. Page 3, Platte River Basin Plan, Southeast Wyoming, $250,000. Page 3, Powell Airport Water Supply, Park County, $50,000. We're doing a feasibility study to see whether it's feasible to run a line out to the Park County, or not Park County, but Powell Airport. Page 3, Sweetwater Supply. This is in Weston County. That's $100,000. Page 3, Wheatland Master Plan, Platte County, $150,000. For the total of in Phase 1 there is $1,785,000. Now we'll go over, we're on down to the next, and these are level 2 studies. The water development account is still paying 100%. Page 5, Arapahoe Water Supply, Fremont County, $500,000. Page 5, Bighorn Regional Groundwater. That's up in my area. We're going to see if we can find another place to drill another well. There's several places that we know there's good water. It's just getting the permits and things to get into it. One of them is over there by Black Mountain or Bull Mountain. We know there's a good supply there, but we have to get in there. Page 5, Cheyenne Belvoir Ranch Groundwater. This is in Laramie County. That's $2 million. We're going to do some test wells out there up at the upper end of that Belvoir Ranch. Page 5, it's a GRSRC JP Water Supply. This is in Sweetwater County. That's $350,000. Page 5, Laramie Water Management Study, Albany County, $100,000. Page 5, Poison Spider Pipeline in Natrona County. We're going to have to put in a new pipeline out there at the Poison Spider School and that little community out there. Page 5, Yoder Groundwater, Goshen County. They have arsenic in their water there, so we got to see if we can find another supply there. That's $400,000. So in Phase 2, the total amount is $4,300,000. Now we're going over on page 6, and now the funds coming out of this are going to come out of account 3. The Big Sandy enlargement, we're trying to see if we can take a look at the Big Sandy Reservoir over there out of Farson, and if we can raise that and store more water there, why, that'll help us with the salinity and stuff going into the Green River and on down to the Colorado River. That's $100,000. Page 6. Clear Creek Watershed, that's in Johnson County. We're looking there to see if we could put in a reservoir of 2,000 acre feet or more, because all these Phase 3 projects have to be 2,000 acre feet or larger, so they're pretty good sized dams. That's 300,000. So the total coming out of account three would be $400,000. Now we're on phase two. Is the Middle Fork, Middle Pawnee Reservoir in Sublette County, and that's 500,000. What's up in there is an old reservoir that the Forest Service may want to abandon, and we're hoping maybe we can get that and recoup and beef that dam up and store that water so it's Wyoming's water and doesn't go on down to the Colorado River. The next one is the Sheridan Supply Storage. They need more water up there. They're growing. It's 350,000, a municipal reservoir. Page 7, Sublette Creek Reservoir in Lincoln County, 375,000. That's to make a reservoir there larger. And then page 7, the Vidanotan enlargement, Lincoln County, 150,000. And we're working with Rocky Mountain Power there to see if we can raise that dam up, and then Wyoming would get the top storage of that. So the total in phase two there coming out of account three is $1,375,000. Now we're going on, these are rehabs now we're going into on phase two, and page 8, Pioneer Rehab is in Natrona County, $75,000 pipeline replacement. And so the total out of that will be $75,000 out of account two money. Now we're going on down to some more rehabs, and these are all level one. Austin Wall Rehab, that's in Uinta County. That's a canal and reservoir, $110,000. Page 9, Red Lane Master Plan. That's a little community north of Thamop. Their old water supplies, the pipes and all that's coming apart, so we're going to see if we can help them redo their delivery lines there. That's $65,000. Page 10, Wheatland ID Master Plan, $300,000. And we're trying to get some of those water plans all around those towns and see if we can get them all put together and make them one regional water plan. The total coming out of account two there will be $475,000. So the total coming out of account one will be $6,085,000. Account two will be $550,000. And account three is $1,775,000. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Question being called, all those in favor of Senator Geist's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate or House Bill 100, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 100 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 207. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill number 207, sponsored by Representative Carson, Internet Hunting, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation to House Bill number 207. There is a Standing Committee amendment, and I would ask that be read in now.
House Bill 207, Standing Committee Amendment number 1, page 1, line 2.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, what this deals with is Internet hunting. This is kind of something that was happening up until about a year and a half ago out of Texas, where people would pay this company a certain amount of money and have a remote-controlled rifle on a game ranch and could actually, from their basement or from their living room, actually shoot game and have it dressed up or have the meat sent to them or have the head sent to them. There are those who consider it to be unsporting, like about everybody. Texas outlawed it, and I had a handout put out, and it's been outlawed in, I believe, about 38 states, and you can all the darkened colored states. It has been outlawed to either have the game there or to shoot the game from your internet. However, there is a concern that it may move offshore or may move to a Central American country or a country immediately south of us, because apparently there is good money in it. There's a further explanation attached to the map as to what it's about and what it does. And, Mr. Chairman, during discussion in the committee, the original bill said talked about shooting wildlife, and we got to thinking, well, why just wildlife? The idea of shooting any animal via remote control, via your internet, was fairly abhorrent. So we brought the Standing Committee Amendment, which adds the words or animals, to that category. And with that, I'll move the Standing Committee Amendment.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that
there's much more to explain. The sport, so-called sport, is up there with, frankly, with dogfighting as far as being an activity that we don't want the people of Wyoming to be dealing in. And with that, I'd stand for questions.
Further discussion on House Bill 207. Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a good opportunity to stop this right now with a no vote on this bill. I think it's absolutely despicable to have a remote gun, unless we were able to send the gun to Iraq or something like that. I'm against this, and let's vote it out of here now.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what this bill does. An aye vote on this bill would ban this sport. So if you do not like the idea of shooting animals or wildlife via the internet, then vote aye on this bill.
Further discussion? Hearing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 207, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 207 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 198. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 198, sponsored by Representative Anderson, Wheat Marketing Commission Assessments, an act relating to Wheat Marketing Commission. It was referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Geis.
When the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move House Bill 198 do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Jennings to explain the bill.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a rather easy bill. If you, you'll see that it's with the Wheat Marketing Commission, something we already have in place and working well. If you look over on page 2, line 3 and 4, you'll notice that right now their assessment is 1 cent per bushel. And what they want to do to cover some of their costs is to raise that to 2.5 cents per bushel. That would equal about a one-third increase. And because of the lightning speed of the other bill with all the water in it, we're a little late on this, but you'll have a map like this. Shows you that in Wyoming, that the eastern side shows you where the wheat's grown. So that's pretty much the participants in this. This wheat commission has offices in 30 foreign countries to help sell the wheat that we grow over here. Producer, if he's not happy with what they do with the assessment, he can ask for it back. So we're raising that. And then, Mr. Chairman, you'll see on line 13, rather than the collections on the 15th day of the month, next to the succeeding month, it's at the quarter. So we've given a quarter to get all their financial stuff, and which the wheat is sold to get their money out. So, Mr. Chairman, all this is really a commission that's supporting itself, asking for a little bit more money, and if the wheat growers don't like it, they can ask for it back. I'd hope you vote on this and stand for any
questions. Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Just a couple of things could be answered before second reading. Do you have to ask for all of it back, or can you ask for part of it back? You know, it might be all right to give the wheat commission $100, but then a guy's saying, well, now I got to give him $250, and maybe I don't want to give him the whole $250. So the question is, can you have a partial thing? The other question is, if you deliver your Wyoming wheat to another elevator like in Nebraska that also has a wheat commission, do you have to pay both the Nebraska Commission and the Wyoming Commission? And do Nebraska or Colorado, do they have refunds on their commissions?
Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Well, we'll have to find that out, Senator, because nobody asked us that question in committee. I believe you sat in there that night. But I think we can find that out. And what all this does is just allow them to go up to that much. It doesn't say they have to. And maybe you can get half of it back, but we'll ask and find out.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 198, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Floor.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I just want the body to note the number of bills that are up there for today. We're moving right along, and it's only 10:30. Take note of that second flight of bills, starting with 226, ending with 92. I intend to go for a fairly normal day-to-day, so if we finish those above, ending with 241, we'll go right on into those for the next day. So, committee chairs, those of you who are presenting, take note of what those bills are. We'll just move right from one group right into the other if we have time today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Where was I at? House Bill 198 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 195. The reading clerk will read the bill if I give it to him.
House Bill number 195, sponsored by Representative Brown, Real Estate Act Amendment, an act relating to Real Estate License Act of 1971. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Case, Cooper, Johnson, and Scott, excuse Senator Hastert, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 195. I think I should yield to the good senator from Teton County since he signed on to this bill, but I can see it's not laying on the top of his desk. So, pretty simple. I'm also on this bill, Mr. Chairman. This is brought by the Real Estate Commission. It updates their statutes. Most of the things in here relate to a background check requirements. Mr. Chairman, there's also, if you look, it changes the amount of money that the commission gets, the commission members get. It raises it from $20 per day to the legislative salary rate, which is $150 per day right now. It also gives them per diem and mileage as allowed to state employees. That's actually old language, and that stays the same. Mr. Chairman, as you can see, it basically goes into every section of the real estate law and adds that the required information to apply for your license includes a criminal history background check as provided in WS 719-2001A. The committee did ask why would a background check be required for real estate license folks. It turns out that in these folks do have significant access to property and financial information. For example, in a large community like Cheyenne, where there's a multi-list system, these folks have keys to the multi-list system, which allows you to have, in essence, a way to enter perhaps 200 houses that might be on the market in Cheyenne right now. So it's a fairly significant responsibility, that's the purpose of the bill. Be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, but I'm sure I could yield to the good senator from Teton County.
Further discussion? Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just perhaps a little bit more question about what problems have resulted in the past by not having background checks. You know, we get an awful lot of these requests every session. The requirements for background checks for another group of professions roll through here like coal trains through Campbell County. And so I'm wondering if we shouldn't stop every once in a while and say, look at all the fingerprints that we're putting into the system, all the background information that we're digging through individuals. And when they deal with people in the healthcare industry or education or with kids, you know, that's understandable. But perhaps in some of these others, maybe we should stop for a second and ask what crimes have been committed, what problems have resulted. And if there's a lot of problems that we need to resolve or to solve, then this is justifiable. If it's just based upon what could happen, then maybe we should think twice.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can give you one example. My wife's father had a piece of property out in Los Angeles, and in his sunset days, he wanted to sell it, got him a real estate agent out there, and there was enough information in that transaction, which that agent never did complete, to steal my father-in-law's identity. So for many years after that, matter of fact, we didn't get that cleared up until father-in-law passed away. So for 5 or 6 years, it kept coming back because the information provided to sell the property was enough information to steal his identity with some, you know, Social Security number, credit cards, all that kind of stuff. As it turned out, this was something this guy did over and over again. So had convictions on. So if there had been a background check on him, that would have come to the surface immediately, and of course they would have run away and used somebody else. So it might be, you're right, and the coal trains might be slowing down, and maybe we should slow this down, these background checks. But this is a good one, and we fought it for a long time, and the only solution was daddy-in-law died.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I feel a lot the same way. I mean, we're doing this more and more. But these people have, in essence, access and control over huge amounts of property. The good senator from Lander pointed out the multi-list. It isn't only multi-list. Some agencies and so on have keys, entrance, all those kind of things that go into huge dollar amounts of property that they're exposed to. There have been some instances of that. I can't cite you specifically where and when. I know there was one in our community where they come in. If you put the background checks in, what you do in most cases is they won't apply because they know the background check's going to be in there and you're eliminating most of the crooks in the first place. But in addition to that, you have firms with real estate licenses who hire on to manage property, to take care of property when they're gone. And folks, you're not talking about just a few bucks in petty theft. You're talking about some homes that we had some complaints on that they've taken all the furniture, all the things. They go in, and by the time the owner gets back, a month or two later, there isn't anything left in the house. And so I think this is an appropriate time to try to make sure, if we can, those people applying for licenses and those people doing this kind of thing do have a background check. It will eliminate most of them right in the beginning. They're not going to apply if they come in and they know they're going to have a background check. But you're talking about large dollars of property that I think, if we're going to license them, that they need to be protected from.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would also just point out that this, of course, is a bill brought by a profession and the board that regulates that profession. It's not like we decided that we wanted to impose this on them. They have asked for this requirement. A couple things that are also in the bill that I didn't mention in my early explanation is it clarifies the type and definitions of errors and omissions insurance that's required. And also, Mr. Chairman, it has to do with the retention of records. It's actually lowering the number of years that records need to be retained from 10 years down to 7. That kind of is a better matchup with the IRS requirements, Mr. Chairman. That's really the gist of the bill. There is another section that says they can't act like an attorney or be an attorney in fact unless they actually are an attorney. And the attorneys, I'd appreciate that, I'm sure. And we did that just for them, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, again, on the E&O insurance that you're talking about. And I don't know if any of the members of the Senate have tried to get this insurance. It's very expensive. And I'm wondering if the profession understands and realizes that, if there was any discussion relative to the cost that may be. And, of course, it's based on deductibles and all of those kinds of things. But it's, you know, I don't know of very many professions in our state where you say that you shall get it. I think that's been pretty much left up to the board of directors and individuals and their own responsibilities. I guess the other part of the question would be, is this something that we do in other areas, or are we starting to now say that everybody shall have E&O insurance if they deal in the public arena?
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would point out that the E&O, or errors and omission insurance, is not really a new requirement in the bill, but it does clarify definitions about group and individual policy. If you look on page 5 of the bill, existing language 3228.401 is the E&O insurance requirement that's in statute now. And you can see that they're actually just changing the word plan to program, and it kind of fits with the definition. And that you will see, though, that on line 4, the word optional is changed to individual coverage. It says all licensees shall obtain and maintain errors and omissions insurance coverage under the group program or individual. So you have – there was always a requirement to have O&E insurance. This kind of clarifies that there's two ways you can get it, individually or through a group, and there's definitions of individual and group at the very end of the bill. So it's not like it's a new imposition, and the good senator raised a good point. I mean, it is expensive insurance. I've had to get it on occasion for consulting work, and sometimes I think it's real overkill. But it's not a new imposition. It's really clarifying how it and the definition of group versus individual.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I have three questions. How many other states require this, the background checks and so forth, for real estate licenses? On page 3, line 11, new language, says persons applying for a new license. So does that mean that the current license holders are grandfathered in, or are they going to have to go back and get background checks and fingerprinting and so forth? And my last question has to do on page 5, line that paragraph there, 33, 28, 123, the retention of records. They're cutting the amount of time that records have to be maintained from 10 years down to 7. I was wondering what the reason is for that.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I can't answer the question about the number of states that require this background checks now. I'll try to get that information and catch up with the good senator and, if necessary, the entire body on second reading. The requirement on page 3, oh, I'm sorry, the requirement on page 5 about the retention of records, you can see that lines 14 and 15, the number of years that you have to keep and maintain records is being lowered from 10 years to 7 years. Our understanding and the testimony in committee was that 7 years a better matchup with the IRS records retention period, and that 10 years was overkill, and that so that's your issue there. It does lower from 10 to 7. I'm not sure that's a big thing. I think most businesses face a 7-year legal retention period for records. Seems reasonable to me. And the good senator, my bunkie here, what was the line on page 3?
11, there's new licenses, so our licensed agents.
Any point?
Grandfather.
Oh, page 2.
I'm sorry, page 2, Mike.
I guess that's absolutely true. It's a new requirement for persons that would be applying under the section on page 3, line 17. But I guess if you think about it, they have to get a license every year, so I actually do think that this catches everybody, but I will check on that. Because you get your license renewed, I think that's in essence I'm just going to not step into it too far here, Mr. Chairman. I'll figure out if there's a grandfathering here or not. But I think they have to get it because your license is really a new license every year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, cannot tell you how many states do it, but I can tell you there's more and more and more all the time. This goes along with the other real estate or transaction laws that we're revising. There will be another bill coming through about mortgage originators. You recall we've had some laws that pertain to brokers and what they're able to do. Who can be mortgage originators that we just had come through? It's happening in banking. It's happening in mortgagees. People, savings and loan. It's happening in the area of insurance, mortgage insurance. All of those regulated areas are becoming more and more prevalent that you have to have a background check. And the reason is quite obvious. We have more and more crooks, and you're dealing with large amounts of people's property. In some cases, their biggest asset. And so throughout the United States, it is increasing. It's any area, any business where you're dealing with people's money, and as you go forward, banking laws, all the banking laws, you know that we had the discussion, I think it was last year, time passes, it may even have been this year, but on those who are giving mortgages and the qualifications to get in. One of the reasons for that, quite frankly, is the financial mess that we're in now nationally. Because we had people selling and giving mortgages out there throughout the country that all they got was the fee and they were gone, they were out of there. And that's why it's being more regulated, because you're dealing with what could very well be a citizen of Wyoming and of the United States' biggest asset that they ever had. And it's an attempt to cut down on the fraud. It is my understanding that from applying for the new licenses that they didn't want to have everybody have to come back in and be fingerprinted, but it's for new licensees, and I think the when they have to come back in for a license, they're going to have to go through that particular process. As far as the record retention, I've had more comment it should be lower, even than the 7 years. Record retention, particularly old records, before the days of being able to just put them on a computer, took up volumes. It's expensive to hold on to. It's there, and it was thought, as the good senator from Lander pointed out, that 7 years puts you in compliance with most national standards, IRS standards, and that was a more reasonable time. So I hope that answers all the questions.
Further discussion? Hearing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 195, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 195 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 145. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 145, sponsored by Representative Davidson, Rural Health Care Districts Mill Levy, and Act Relating to Rural Health Care Districts. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Larson, Perkins, Schiffer. No, Senators Case and Martin. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 145, Rural Health Care Districts Mill Levy, and for an explanation of this fine piece of legislation, I defer to Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it. This bill, House Bill 145, Rural Health Care District Mill Levy, has to do with increasing the mill levy for rural health care districts. And, Mr. Chairman, rural health care districts are not hospital districts, so I don't want you to confuse that, but are usually small medical clinics, serving small medical clinics that are serving our rural communities. We had in our area a small town clinic that has been impacted pretty severely by the energy growth over in the southwestern end, and they requested that we present this bill. Now, Mr. Chairman, going through the bill now, if you start with section 352708 little c up there at the top of page 2, this is all existing language that has just been modified to provide an exception for an additional 2 mill levy if approved by the Board of Trustees and by the electors of the Rural Health Care District. And then down below there on the same page, subsection D on line 15 through line 8 on page 3, this is all new language, Mr. Chairman, that covers the three steps required in order to increase the initial 2 mill levy to an additional 2 mills for a total maximum levy of 4 mills. Now, this is a three-step procedure here is what it takes in order to do this. First of all, you have to have an affirmative vote by the Board of Trustees of the district in order to increase these additional 2 mills. Second of all, you have to have authorization by the county commissioners and ask for them to call an election for the proposition to the electors. And then third, it requires a majority of those voting in the election to approve the mill levy increase. And then if we move down to lines 20 on page 2 there of this section through line 2 on page 3, that's where it describes the election process under the current election code statutes. As you can see there, they're actually quoted, those statutes in that part of this bill. The last two lines of this section, little D, and this is up on this is actually line 7 and 8, and this is over on page 3, provides that the district will pay the cost of the special elections because these elections could possibly occur during the middle of the year, and the and it would be an extra election in that year, so that they would be expected to pay for this. The last two lines of this section, oh, I'm sorry, I'm repeating myself, Mr. Chairman, but in section E, which is the next section down there, little e, on page 3, is all the new language that provides for a requirement that the two additional mills must be voted on by the electors every 4 years. So you have to put it, present these extra two mills to the electors every 4 years for, in order to continue the imposition of these extra two mills. Also in lines 16, 17, and 18 of this section, it says that if the two mill levy is defeated, it cannot be put on the ballot again for another 23 months. So basically you have to go almost another 2 years before you can put that on the ballot again. In section 39.13.104, Romanette 11 on page 4, this section 39 goes into the tax code, and this just simply modifies the limitation to a not to exceed from the initial two mills now to four mills. Mr. Chairman, that's basically what this bill is about, and I'll ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. One, do we have some more information as to how prevalent these are? And my understanding is they typically will be running a clinic that gets staffed part-time. Is that correct? And what's producing the need for the more revenue? Is it just growth in some of the mineral areas, or are there more expenses connected with staffing and operating these? And my second question is basically, as introduced, the bill just authorized an increase to by the Board of Trustees from two mills to four mills. Now we find it with an election, and I'm wondering if that addition of the election is going to destroy some of the purpose of the bill. I think a lot of these are in fairly small and rural areas, sometimes with oil wells, sometimes without. And I wonder if the cost of the election is going to really cut into any value that's gained from having the extra mills. So I'd like a little comment on that. Should we return to the as-introduced version?
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we had some testimony in committee along those lines. In the case that is being mentioned here, there is one rural health care district. There are two clinics operated, I don't know, 50 miles apart, something like that. There's been a lot. In fact, I asked at the committee, and I used to represent them, so I know that one of the biggest fights I've ever seen is between those two clinics, and they had to call a sheriff in to referee. But one thing that I would like everybody to know, and this is a danger in every special district, not just this, not just hospital, I asked the question, how much of the millage or how much of the funds from imposing those mills will be paid by industry and how much will be paid by the citizens who will be voting on it? And the answer was that 99% is going to be paid for by industry, 1% by the people that are going to be voting on it. That's not unusual in special districts, as we all know. But the testimony was in committee once again that is because that's where the usage is. Oil rig accidents, those kind of things dispersed over a wide area, and they do operate two clinics to try to serve those particular people. They want to go. I think the testimony was, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, they have gone from volunteer EMTs, participants and so on, to a paid volunteer program, which they felt they had to do because of the demands on the system. And so that's one of the reasons for the expenses going up. It's my understanding that This is very similar to hospital districts who can now go, I believe, up to the same millage that they're allowing them to do. I hope that answers most of the questions.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe as a follow-up to that, we talk a lot about impact fees and trying to help areas of the state that are growing and have impacts and so forth. And this particular piece of legislation helps us to do it, puts it back in board control, puts it back in the Board of Trustees control, puts it back in the residents' control through the vote. So I'd urge you to support this. This is helping us to address a situation where there isn't a hospital, but where there are clinics that need some help along the way. And they can do it perhaps through the election process, and those who are there causing the impact are helping to pay the 99% as noted. Thank you.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In order to try to clarify or answer some of these questions, yeah, this particular clinic that we were just talking about is probably, I think, the nearest hospital is 70 miles, and there's another couple hundred miles from there. So there isn't really a handy hospital if you're in some sort of a bad accident. And one thing is the energy impact in the area do rely upon these two clinics that we were talking about considerably for any of their accidents and things like that. So, yes, in fact, industry will be paying a large share of the increase in this particular area we're talking about. But the fact of the matter is they're the ones that are creating the impact and are bringing the people in. So it's if the community was stayed as small as it was before, you probably wouldn't need this. Also, as far as the doctors and nurses in this clinic, yes, that is correct. They were on a very much part-time basis, but now they've almost practically and have gone to a full-time scheduling process in the clinic because of the demand on them. What they've had to do because of the increase in this number of patients because of the energy expansion in the area. They've increased the size of the buildings. They've increased the size of the staff in order to handle all this this impact on them. So there's quite a few reasons for this. And like I say, it does require that the county commissioners can still refuse this. It says that they have to authorize the election, and they can turn them down if they want to. Couple of instances when I was a commissioner, we did turn districts down because we felt it wasn't substantiated enough. But the fact of the matter is, they still has to go out to the electors. Electors that are in the area to be able to be willing to pay the additional $2 million. And another part of this is to remind you again, it's a renewable on a 4-year basis. They have to go back out like they do in the optional sales tax and approve it every 4 years. So,
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions, and as I understand the bill, of course it'll be for everywhere, but there's only one particular place in our state right now that may need that. And the question I have, are they taxing the full 12 mils? Are the county commissioners doing that? And have they, in fact, utilized any county money to help enhance the expenses that they have for the rural health care districts in the past?
Senator Cooper?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the county that's involved here indeed does, to the chagrin of some of the industry people, they do charge a full mil, a full 12 mils, the maximum that the county commission can charge, so they levy it full time. As far as the county supplying the district with any funding, I'd have to find that out, Mr. Chairman, but I don't believe that the counties can actually give other mill levy dollars from their county funds, the general funds, out to special districts or any kind of district. However, I can check on that to be sure, but that brings to mind, in my own mind, having operated in that arena for a number of years, they can't do that. I think they can loan money to them that has to be repaid back to the county general fund, but I don't know that they can actually give them money, especially since they already have their own mill levy. They're supposed to be able to support themselves on that mill levy.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my recollection, you have different ways of funding medical care out there. You do with a special hospital district. which that's what we choose to use up in Park County. But I disagree with the good senator. I think counties can. You know, there's counties that are, in fact, in the medical services hospital business, and I think Natrona County is one of them. They can be in the fire business. You have the option of having special districts out there for fire and hospital. What I'm a little bit skeptical about this bill, I think I know where it's coming from. You're talking about the county that has the second highest valuation of any county in the state. The 12 mills in this particular county, there should be plenty of funds available. If the county I'm thinking of was 6,000 to 7,000 people, there should be plenty of funds available to be able to deal with this issue. I'm skeptical about going out and putting a potential ad valorem tax increase, potential, on the books, going from 2 to potentially 4 mills. I think that the county has the ability to deal with this issue. Rural health care is a huge need in the state. And I understand the concerns with it, but why are we going to go out and create a potential local ad valorem tax increase that Minerals is going to pay most of?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm sure the county over there has quite a bit of revenue. I'm also sure with the impact they're having, they've got quite a bit of needs for that revenue. And my concern, frankly, with this is I think this bill will work for the situation that caused the bill to come here. You know, I think probably that the cost of the election is going to be trivial compared to what they're going to get out of the mill levy. It seems to me there's a gas field or two there that we know about that will produce some real revenue. What my concern is that I think that there's a number of these districts in other parts of the state that this election requirement that has been added in since the bill was introduced may cause trouble for, that the cost of the election may deter. And there may be some very real needs that need to be addressed. Our emergency medical system across the state is getting extraordinarily fragile. And that's one of the things that these districts, I believe, can and do. And we may find that by passing this bill this way, we've solved one problem, and we've got a solution that won't work for the districts in a good part of the rest of the state because of the cost of the special election involved. So that is a real concern here, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there must have been a disconnect with communications with the good senator from Park County with what I was trying to say about counties, and maybe there wasn't, but what I was trying to say is that once you create a district in a county, whether it's to build a hospital for a fire district, for weed and pest district, whatever you want to have, cemetery districts, irrigation districts, whatever, I think, and I'll check on this to be sure to the good senator, that counties cannot just literally, once those have been created, just hand them additional money out of the general fund in the county because they have their tax mill levy. However, I will check on that and get back with you to find out that for sure. However, counties indeed can have a hospital. If they want to build their own hospital and have it in the county, they can do it if they want to fund it. And that's fine, but that's different than creating a district, a hospital district. That's a county hospital, which is totally different than a hospital district, okay? And so because you don't have a mill levy, the county's just simply subsidizing the hospital and building it, okay? So that's a little different. So I forgot to cover this, but the good senator from Natrona County actually mentioned about the cost of the election. I don't think for the number of voters in most of these rural areas, the cost of election would be too much. I mean, even at the outside, if you were talking $10,000, would be, and this tax would certainly generate a great deal more than that. So anyway, I'll leave it with that.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It may be that the cost of the elections in some areas are a lot. I don't think they're going to be severe. But I personally would not want to see additional taxes put on through the special district process without giving the people a chance to vote on it. That's just not something philosophically that I can adhere to. Elections in special districts are okay, though this one, I may add, that's going to come. As I mentioned, 99% is going to be paid by a couple of taxpayers. It is still put before the people to let them decide if their share is going to be there. I understand the cost motivation, but I still believe that if you're going to increase people's taxes, giving them the right to vote on it is absolutely critical. So I would urge you to support the bill.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, I had a note sent in here from one of my commissioners from Sublette County, and he says that Sublette County has funded construction of both the new clinics at both ends of the county at approximately a cost of $12 million for the two clinics.
So further discussion. Senator Dockstetter.
I'll note. On that whole concept was noted, let them deal with it, and that's what this bill does. It lets them deal with the situation, the problem right there in their own county.
Further discussion? Hearing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 145, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 145 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have the privilege of the floor, please?
The privilege is yours, Mr. Senator Townsend.
Thank you. I would ask the Senate. Welcome the middle school students from Weston County District Number 1 in Newcastle for their presence here, and Mrs. Stevenson, and I think there's 7 or 8 people that came along as well. Please welcome the students up here in the balcony from Newcastle.
Welcome to the Senate. Welcome to the Senate. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 111. The reading clerk will please read the House bill.
House Bill number 111, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, Clean Coal Task Force, an act relating to Clean Coal Task Force. It was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations, that reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the due pass recommendation on House Bill 111. To explain the bill, I'd like to call on Senator Martin.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, while the Clean Coal Task Force process is working well, its origin was based on a series of legislative provisions, some in codified law, some in non-codified law, and some in budget bills, which by their terms have a limited life, which would be the end of the biennium. In 2007, the program was created, and state general funds, $2.5 million, were appropriated for the program. In 2008, AML funds were authorized for the program, and the Clean Coal Task Force was extended till 2010. House Bill 111 essentially aggregates the legislative provisions into a single new statute. Mr. Chairman, having said that, I'll quickly walk the body through the bill and explain exactly what House Bill 111 will accomplish. Sections 1 through 4, pages 1, lines 9 through 16, and pages 2, 3, 4, and 5 places in codified law or the statute books what is currently a non-codified law, which is only available in the session law. It extends the sunset date for the Clean Coal Task Force from June 30th, 2010 to June 30th, 2013. And the rationale for this is that this research is likely to be ongoing for several more years. An additional $13.6 million in AML funds is proposed in the Governor's 2009 supplemental budget, and the Clean Coal Task Force should continue its role as long as research projects are underway. Mr. Chairman, it extends the existing annual September 30th reporting requirement to the Governor and the Joint Minerals, Business, and Economic Development Interim Committee as long as the Clean Coal Task Force is in operation. If the Clean Coal Task Force will continue, the annual reporting requirement should also continue. It provides that any appropriation of AML funds in 2009 or beyond for clean coal research under the Clean Coal Task Force purview can be handled as provided in the 2008 budget bill. That is, the Clean Coal Task Force must submit its recommendations for award of research project funding to the Governor and Minerals Committee for review. This provides that 2009 and subsequent AML authorizations for clean coal research can be handled the same as it was authorized in 2008. Section 5, subsection A, page 6, lines 3 through 8, it provides that the 2007 general fund appropriation into the clean coal research account will not revert but can continue to be used for clean coal research. In the rationale behind this, the remaining $670,000 from 2007 appropriation will undoubtedly be committed and expended over the next few years. The reversion clause was inserted in 2007 to ensure there was an effort to move the research program along. The Clean Coal Task Force needs the flexibility to be able to commit these funds for research, just as in the case for AML funds. Section 5, subsection B, page 6, lines 10 through 13. The 2007 legislation appropriated $100,000 to the Governor's Office for expenses of the Clean Coal Task Force, and the balance of those funds is carried forward to be used to fund the Clean Coal Task Force expenses. Let's note that by law, the Clean Coal Task Force is staffed by the Governor's Office with assistance from the UW School of Energy Resources. Section 5, subsection C, page 6, lines 15 through 18. This appropriation was developed by LSO to cover the salary per diem and mileage for the legislators, members of the Clean Coal Task Force. And section 5, subsection D, lines 24 and page 7, lines 1 through 10, limits the use of the appropriation to the purpose specified and directs the Governor and the LSO to include these appropriations in their standard biennial budget request. Section 6, page 7, lines 12 through 15, states that the Act is effective immediately. And with that explanation, Mr. Chairman, I will try to answer any questions, or the good senator who from the northeast part of the state who serves on the Clean Coal Task Force possibly would be able to answer them too.
Discussion. Senator Vasey.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just so that I'm tracking this right, I believe I heard the good senator say something about a sunset date moved to 2013, and then, but on page 7, line 7, it talks about the appropriations being in the next standard budget, and that's 2012. Isn't that the limiting factor rather than a sunset date, or did I misunderstand that?
Further discussion? Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In order to Yes to both of those things. We need the extension of it to fully carry on with what we're doing, and also the funds need to become too.
Further discussion?
Yeah.
Senator Vasey.
Chairman, I understand now. But I guess my concern, and then not to go on with this, but you know, these sunset dates are wonderful, except we have the chance of this body to vote on a budget, and so if there were no funds from the no appropriated funds in 2011-2012, where does that leave 2013?
Further discussion? Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since the funds don't revert, the continuation to finish the projects, if we weren't funded after that date, then we could continue to go because we do have the authority to be active after that.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we can get an update on what this outfit's done so far and how much money is left in the account, kind of where they spent it and what have they got to show for it 2 years later.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have those figures in front of me, but there is a spreadsheet that we can get to you as soon as we can. But there is data that we can get and present to the body.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding in Section 5, Subsection A, page 6, lines 3 through 8, it provides that the 2007 general fund appropriation in the clean coal research will not revert. And it indicates that the information that I received, that there's approximately $670,000 from the 2007 appropriation, which would be carried forward, anything that's left from that. And now they're also looking at some AML funding.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, now I'm well-versed on the amount of money they have. And we're creating this, they'll now be in statute. They've been going 2 years. What projects have they got done? What have we got to show for 2 years of effort by the Clean Coal Task Force?
Senator Massey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple tables here that I could share with, including the senator from Johnson County as well as anybody else. In 2007, the Clean Coal Technology Fund approved projects, four major projects. They were submitted by the Western Research Institute, Department of Renewable Resources, the Supercritical Fluids Incorporated, and Emory Energy Company. And the amounts were roughly $400,000, $485,000, $375,000, and $562,000 for a total of $1.8 million with a like match in other funds. And I can provide all these details in the table here. Let's see. And with regard to the areas of research, one dealt with pre-combustion, pre-gasification technologies, another with carbon capture and sequestration technologies. A second one did the same in combustion and gasification design technologies. In 2008, there were five more awards. They were submitted by and awarded to the University of Wyoming Chemical and Petroleum Engineering Department, University of Wyoming and Penn State University, Western Research Institute, EERC and Pavlish, and Ohio University. Total funding requests were a little bit over $2.6 million with a like amount in match. And there were various outside matching organizations besides these folks that got the awards And the technology areas were carbon capture technologies, sequestration technologies, combustion and gasification design technologies, as well as post-combustion gas cleanup, pre-combustion coal technologies, coal to liquids, and coal to hydrogen technologies. And so that's the work of this task force over the past 2 years, the amount of funding, the research that's being funded, and who received it.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 111, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 111 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 140. The reading clerk will please read the House bill.
House Bill number 140, sponsored by Representative Gingery. Annuity Premium Tax, an act relating to annuity premium taxes. Annuity, right? It was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, and Martin. No, Senators Perkin and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report. It do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 140, the Annuity Premium Tax. And for an explanation of this bill, I'll yield to whichever sponsor is willing to stand up. Senator Larson.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me be very clear. This bill has nothing to do with nudity. Mr. Chairman, this problem was brought to me by a constituent from Du Bois who had come into a little money through her estate and had bought an annuity. Now, most of you know what an annuity is. You go to an insurance company. You give them some money. They pay you interest, and after a certain number of years, you get that back. She found out after it was there, she says, why am I paying 1%? And I didn't know the answer because, quite honestly, I didn't know we charged on annuities. And we got to looking at it, and folks, this is nothing more. You can call it anything you want, but it's an income tax. Or she put the money in with an insurance company. They paid interest over the period. They paid it back when it came to fruition, and she paid the state of Wyoming 1%. Now, let me give you a similar scenario. You can go to a bank and buy a CD. You keep that CD over whatever period you have. They pay you back the CD and the interest at the end, but you don't pay a 1% income tax, if you would. Some people say it isn't an income tax. I say it is because you're taxing people's assets and the money they made on their investment. Now, in this day and age, anybody that might have some money that wants to invest, an annuity is one of the better ways to do that now. Because, as some of you know, Treasury bills, in most cases, are yielding, yes, less than 1%. Many bank CDs, which in this particular investment environment, you don't know what's going to happen to the bank anyway. They're insured by the federal government up to $250 for a little while till the end of this year. And so your opportunities to invest your money, I think, are limited by this annuity tax. It's been asked how many other states have this. Not many. There are about oh, if you count all the territories and everything with Wyoming, there's about 10, but there's really only about 7 states that tax annuities. And the reason is, frankly, it's just like an income tax. We're one of the ones that have always been proud. We don't have an income tax. This is a tax on your income that you have got from that thing. Not the other policies. Nothing to do with any of the life policies or anything like that. This is strictly an annuity. There are some other states. Yeah, California has it. And there's about 7 other states that do. Florida, I'm not going to read the whole list. But only those number of states and Wyoming tax annuities. Because they're taxing your own money, plus the interest that you've made. Now, we're going to hear, and I would say turn to the back sheet, because that's what you're going to hear. It will be a decrease of $750,000 to the state of Wyoming if that annuity tax is repealed. Not a lot, but it will decrease $750,000. That, number one, is the amount paid. That does not deduct the cost by the Department of Insurance for operating and imposing the tax and so on. So that's a gross amount, not a net amount. And it is a decrease in revenue, and I won't deny that for a minute. But I think in this economic climate that we in Wyoming, who don't charge on income, who have been very proud of the fact that we don't have an income tax, that this is something that we should give our citizens the opportunity to invest in without Wyoming taking a share of the proceeds. I think it's appropriate to take that tax off. I think it puts a level playing field between the investment opportunities for our citizens, between, let's say, a bank CD. Some people feel the insurance annuities have more a protection because they know more about the economics. But that should be their choice, not have to be based on whether the state of Wyoming is going to tax them. Now, I'll readily admit to the $750,000. It isn't a good year to try to do this, but I believe it's an opportunity to tell the citizens of Wyoming, invest your money the way you want to invest it. Just because it's annuity versus a CD, we're not going to tax it. That's your choice based on your return, your safety, and your other investment issues. And folks, no matter what it's called, it's an income tax. They're taxing your assets and your interest earnings that come from this investment. And so I would urge you to support this. Only a few other states tax this, and I think it's time we got rid of it. Urge your support.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess we ought to have a discussion about the characterization of what it is. You know, when you invest with a major money market company, and I'm not certain how they pay their fees, but they're regulated by the federal government, and when they pay, they're registered to either on the stock exchange or some entity where they pay fees, and those fees go to their regulatory entities that supervise them. In this instance, what makes these different, as the sponsor says, is that these are insurance-issued entities. And much like insurance policies are regulated, insurance companies are regulated by the State Insurance Commission. And so when you issue an insurance policy, for example, your health insurance, you pay an insurance or assurance premiums paid by the insurance company back to the insurance commissioner who collects that. And that's what offsets the cost of the insurance commission and sort of pays the user, and part of it is a tax, and it goes into the general fund. And it's an important part of what we do with insurance. Now, when you, and that's partly because we regulate insurance companies. There's no national entity out there like federal entities that regulate your stockbrokers and those firms. We do that regulation at state level. So when you go out and buy an annuity from an insurance company, your assumption is if you're buying it from a AAA rated entity or a solvent company, that there will be a some regulation of the that entity by the State Insurance Commission. In fact, that's one of the reasons why you buy an annuity, because it's a fixed rate entity issued by an entity that's regulated by your state. And part of the there's a cost to the state of Wyoming for doing that, and we charge that cost to the people that enjoy those benefits instead of spreading them across the entire state to people that don't buy annuities. And much the same we do for insurance contracts. So, in this instance, the insurance companies, to my knowledge, is unlike national brokerage firms, aren't paying money or fees to the federal government to be regulated. They're paying their fees, in essence, to the state. So it is much. It's not a. You can call it a tax, but it's a user fee for the people using the state services to receive a product. And you could make the very same argument for insurance policies tomorrow and say, let's get rid of insurance premiums, because ultimately we the users that buy health insurance, and we're paying a tax, if you will, for the benefit of having the State Insurance Commission regulate these entities. So I guess my first reaction is to oppose it, unless we're going to eliminate fees for other entities. These people do have resources, and they're enjoying a special benefit from the State of Wyoming Insurance Commission to regulate these companies to make sure these annuities are, in fact, are issued by sound companies. And if you have a problem with your annuity, who do you go to? You go to the State Insurance Commissioner to enforce it. Now, you wouldn't go to a state entity if you had a decline in your money market. You'd go to a federal entity. But in this case, you go to the state of Wyoming and ask them to address your issues with respect to your annuities.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, was there any testimony in committee or otherwise about the size of the hit to the small group health insurance reinsurance pool from this bill? And was there any testimony about other assessments against that premium tax? For example, I don't know whether these outfits are covered by a guarantee fund or not. And let me explain where I'm coming from on that. Wyoming Statute 2619.312 B provides that all authorized insurers liable for premium tax shall be assessed as necessary to meet the requirements of subsection A, which is the small employer carrier reinsurance program, and that assessment then is a deduction from the gross premium tax. So it occurs before it gets to the general fund. Now, there's a 40% cap on that. If they're assessing at the cap, I haven't done the math exactly, but it's going to be somewhere between $400,000 and $500,000 if this is an accurate representation of the hit on the general fund. So that's a matter of some concern. If we do this and the assessment is anywhere near in that range, we're going to have to come back either for general fund money or some other mechanism to bolster the small employer program, or you're going to see a further rate increase on small employers in that health insurance, which is a real problem we've got. And typically where there are guarantee funds, and I don't know whether there is one in this area or not. I haven't managed to get that researched yet. they're funded with assessments that are deductible against the premium tax, at least in part. So, and I don't know what other assessments there may be. Those are the two potential that I'm aware of. So I'm wondering what testimony there was about that.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, there was no discussion about that because it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply to insurance generally. If you will look at the bill, Section 2 on page 3, WS-26-4-103B3 little I, is repealed. And that is a repealer only on annuities. According to the insurance commissioner, they have those positively identified because they're under separate, not other insurance. And I'm not asking that all other, that any other premiums be done away with. Everything else remains the same with the exception of the repealing that to where there is not a tax, the 1% tax, and it's set on all other policies on annuities. So my best understanding is it applies to nothing else in insurance except annuities. Yeah, the state does oversee the soundness of the companies, if you would. But the comparison with all of the other investment opportunities that are done by the federal government, yeah, they charge the insurance companies the fees, and I'm not sure they shouldn't. And I'm not sure that they shouldn't be charging, as they do, insurance companies in Wyoming. But the federal government taxes you on your income. They absolutely do. The money you make off of an annuity or a CD in a bank or other investment opportunities, the Internal Revenue Service does tax you. The point is, Wyoming does not and has not taxed you on income. And so what I'm submitting is this is income. This is income on your investment. And I don't think that it should be taxed. It does not affect other insurance premiums. It is a hit to the general fund, but the insurance is paid for out of an appropriation and does not operate. The chairman of appropriations can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that they take a separate appropriation that they go to, and they do not operate off of the fees collected based upon on the insurance premiums, that they are separately funded with an appropriation that they request for operating. So it isn't going to hit directly the amount that comes in from the premiums. The money, as I understand it, goes directly to the general fund, and then they come back for their appropriation. So I'm still maintaining it is a case of, does the federal government charge? Absolutely. They don't charge directly on annuities, but they charge you a tax. That's an income tax, and that's where they get their money. I don't think Wyoming should be charging an income tax on somebody's investment when they can do it under other conditions and not pay a tax.
Senator Bebaum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of things, and I hope a lot of you will support this bill. And the Chairman of the Appropriations Committee is correct. There are user fees. What this body needs to understand, and I may not be exact on my numbers, but the Insurance Commissioner supplements our general fund to the tune of around $14 million every biennium. That comes from the premiums on all insurance. Talking about is annuities. It's not the insurance that we have for our cars, for our homes, for liability insurance, it's strictly annuities. I would submit to you, this represents a different population of our state. These are people that have a retirement account. They're people that have worked hard, saved money, and are putting it into different investments so they can get a return. Why should we be charging them a 1% tax on that? I think it's something that we ought to make a decision on policy to say for those of you that
fortunate enough to have a little savings in your accounts, you want to do an annuity, let's let them have and maximize that input by not charging this tax. There's no question it hits the general fund to the tune of $750. As to the small group employers insurance, the testimony we heard in our committee on another bill the other day is that that is an expensive program. It's rising, but there is still enough money based on the total premiums that we receive in the state for all insurance to not only pay for that, but still supplement our general fund to the tune of $14 million. I would just ask you, what's wrong with giving some money back to these people that are saving their money? They go to an annuity fund. They want to build for their retirement. We are a growing population, particularly in here, and I think it's a good idea.
Senator Perkins.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to I was a no vote in committee, and I just wanted to share the way that I looked at this and for my no vote on this particular bill. Ultimately, what you have is you have a sales tax on the premiums that you pay on your annuity. Is that an income tax? Well, that's certainly one way to look at it. But the other way that you can look at it, too, is there's other types of benefits and other types of investments you can have that you pay tax on, maybe sales tax. But if you like real estate and you like to invest in real estate, well, gosh, you're paying a property tax on that. You could certainly assert that property taxes on rental properties would be a tax on your income because it will decrease your income from those rental properties. Ultimately, as you go out there, if you wanted to invest in your business and you wanted to have assets in your business, well, you're going to pay sales tax or use tax on what you acquired to use in your business in many instances. And that obviously is going to lower your income, and that could reduce your retirements and reduce your compensation, and you could characterize that as a tax on income as well. Ultimately, the long and short of it is this. When you make those investments, you understand that there may be costs. There may be fees that go to commission fees. There may be fees that you may have in a mutual fund or a money market fund. You may have front-end load fees. You may not have back-end load fees. There's always fees and costs associated with the various investments that you have. And this is just one of them that you need to take into consideration. Whether this is deserving of an exemption in its own right, you can certainly make that determination. But the other side of that coin is that ultimately when you look at that, there's in a lot of places when you look at these annuities, there's not a whole lot of difference between these annuities and lots of other insurance products. That line gets pretty gray in a lot of instances. And, when you come back and when a year or two, when somebody comes back for an exemption on insurance premiums altogether, no matter what, you're going to have to answer those same kinds of issues. I see this as a difference without a distinction or a distinction without a difference.
Senator Nicholas.
Well, and I guess after listening to explanation, and here's what continues to be missing for me. If a committee is going to undertake to reduce the fees that are charged to a user for a service, it seems to me the evidence that we have or the responsibility is to bring in and take a look at what the cost of that entity is, why we're charging those fees, so that the rest of the people who don't have the opportunity to have or invest in annuities aren't paying for the cost of government to regulate, preserve, and ensure an atmosphere where folks that can buy them get a safe environment to invest their dollars. Once again, I haven't heard, but I believe that if you go to a major stock brokerage firm, they're paying fees. And inherent in the management fee that you pay is a fee that they in turn pay, and your rate of return, there's fees they pay either to the Security and Exchange Commission or to some other entity that oversees them, so that part of the people investing in those are the ones that are paying for the fees. And when they say, look, this is an income tax, this is not a general service provided to everybody. It's a specific service that we pay for out of our general fund to have the insurance commissioner engage in the effort to protect these investments, make sure the insurance companies are solvent. And if tomorrow one of these firms went bankrupt, you would make your claim to the insurance commissioner. They would bring in receivers. They would go out to the effort to make sure that all of your assets are protected, that the annuity accounts are there, and as an annuitant that you're protected. And it seems to me that we could tax generally everybody in the state to pay for this cost, or we could continue to do what we've done in the past, and that is say that the people that enjoy this benefit, they're the ones that pay for the user fee. So make no bones about it, you're essentially saying to these folks, you get to enjoy a little bit higher rate of the return at the expense of all the other taxpayers in the state who will pay to protect your assets. And when you put your money in a bank, folks, those banks, they make pay fees. Perhaps we should stop collecting our fees from banks because that's a tax. When you put your money into that bank, and that bank gives you 2% back. Part of the reason is because they pay money to the, they pay a tax to the federal regulators, or if they're a state, they pay a fee to the state. Let's stop that too, so that everybody pays the cost of regulating banks. You know, why is it do you pay, you only get 2% on your return at a bank? Partly because they pay fees, and somebody has to regulate them. And if you want to pass that on to everybody else, so the people that don't have the advantage of putting their money in a bank, don't have any money to spend, that they're paying their property taxes and their sales taxes to support the regulation and the protection of your assets in those banks. And if we're going to do it, let's look at all. Let's go to banks, let's go to stockbrokers, let's go to the insurance industry and everyone. But if you have not undertaken as a committee to evaluate that across the board, to pick out one group and say, geez, we think you ought to have special treatment, that seems to me fundamentally unfair and not an appropriate process to get to the end.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, the fees that support the insurance department are separately assessed. And now, there may be a problem here if they're assessed, I don't know the exact mechanism, if they're an offset to the premium tax, which could be, then we may have a little bit of a problem there we need to explore. But they're separately assessed. And once you get through any assessments that may be deductible as a premium tax credit. And I'm sorry, I think the statute is, whether it's administered that way, I think statute is that it is assessed to support the small group insurance. And I think we ought to inquire about that. But those fees are separately assessed. And then this, the $750,000 you see in the footnote, that's a simple general fund reduction from the repeal of a tax. It's a tax that is much the same as sales tax or any of the other excise taxes we have that aren't generally dedicated. It goes in the general fund, and we spend it for the general purposes of the government. So the question is not, are you knocking out a set of fees that support your regulatory agency? It's you're knocking out a tax that helps support our general fund. And then the question is that something we ought to do in this particular circumstance? I really think the argument about these being fees to support the regulatory agency is kind of a red herring here. It's more, I think we really have to look at it as knocking out a tax that's on our general fund.
Mr. Chairman, and I, too, was a no vote on this bill for a number of reasons. One is that the state of Wyoming, through our insurance department, the insurance commissioner, guarantees the soundness when they license an insurance company. Now, if you've got money to invest, whether it's 10 bucks or a 10 million, you've got a number of choices. And one of the safe choices are these insurance annuities, because the state of Wyoming says they're safe. Probably on the other end of the scale, you can go invest. You could have invested in Lehman Brothers. And the state of Wyoming doesn't guarantee safety there. But in this case, the state is saying, because this company's licensed in the state of Wyoming, it is a safe company. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and you can call it whatever you want, but in fact, the way this tax originated, it was imposed instead of all other taxes on premiums or income. Now, that's subsection F of this same part of the statute. And I agree, it goes to the general fund, that's standard, and then we appropriate money to run the insurance department. But there is another reason why this piecemeal approach hurts the state of Wyoming. There is no question we have an unhealthy tax system. We rely on natural gas, period. What this bill does is, if you take this tax off, it narrows our tax base and makes it even more unhealthy. And that's what we're doing. That's what any exemption does. It makes our tax system in the state of Wyoming less and less robust, less diverse, and more dependent on the mineral industry. Is it a lot of money? No, really isn't. But in this day and age, given the investment climate we're under, these annuities all of a sudden are extremely attractive. How much money will flow to them? I don't know. But it's much more attractive since in the last 6 months than they've been in the last 8 years. And money's going to flow where it's attractive, where the rate of return is good, and where it's safe. And it's safe because the state of Wyoming says this is a safe investment. I'm a no on the bill. I was a no in committee for those reasons.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Larson, I apologize.
That's all right, Mr. Chairman, and I won't belabor this. If you already have, I guess, but if you look at other investments, the people giving the investment have the tax. It is not a tax on the proceeds. The CD, yeah, the banks are regulated. The banks are charged a fee. They build that into the rate structure, and they go ahead. Frankly, insurance companies do the same thing when they figure out what you're going to get on them. Yes, it is a hit to the general fund, and I will not deny that it narrows the tax base. But, folks, we've got bills going through here. We're going to have some on... We've had some on sales tax exemptions. We've had some, and we're going to continue to have some, on property tax relief. Do they narrow the tax base? They absolutely narrow the tax base. Does it put the burden more on one industry? Absolutely. Anytime we do anything to the general fund, that's what's going to happen. I don't want to use this, but if this method of taxation, which I still believe it's tax on income, if this method is of taxation, there are only 7 other states that do that, and they're the income tax states, and they're the other tax states. Why aren't they doing it if it is considered fair when they're the tax states? I think that it gives us an opportunity, as we're doing all through many other bills, to be able to give some relief to the citizens of Wyoming in this hostile investment environment, to give them some choices. And I ask you to support the bill.
Senator Scott.
Question for the sponsors for second reading, presuming we get there, and I hope we do. What guarantee fund covers these annuities, and how is it financed?
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 140, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
chair is division having been called. All those in favor, please rise. Pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson? Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Yep.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Vasey?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
House Bill 140, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, subsection A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You've heard the motion. What? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we can get any further, I want to introduce the other group of our middle school students from Weston County District Number 1 High School in Newcastle, and give them a warm welcome.
Welcome to the Senate, Mr. President.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
May.
Mr. President, up here in the gallery we have Miss Amy Sorensen and the award-winning class from Crest Hill Elementary. How about giving them a round of applause and welcoming them?
Welcome to the Senate. Senator Nicholas.
Well, I think that while we're debating this, I think that there is a University of Wyoming pre-law club. Are they still here in the north? They'd stand if you give them a hand. Thanks for coming here.
Welcome to the Senate. Reports from standing committees.
February the 19th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 236, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCaria, Jennings, Massey, Von Flatern, Senator Coe, Chairman. February the 19th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 255, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCaria, Massey, Von Flatern, no, Senators Jennings, Senator Co-Chairman. February the 16th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 39, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 2 p.m. this afternoon.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 12:30 up in S-14, where we will take up House Bill 286, engrossed, Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, House Bill 302, engrossed, Game and Fish Pioneer Fishing License, and House Joint Resolution 16, engrossed, Immigration Reform.
Senator Von Platen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet Friday, 15 minutes after noon recess, in S-13. To review House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance, which is a continuation from last night, House Bill 179, engrossed, Phase 2 Study, i.e. tolling, House Bill 85, engrossed, Motor Vehicle Chain Law.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, the committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet tonight upon adjournment in S-15 to take up House Bill 213, Rangeland Monitoring.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, is going to meet at 7:30 tomorrow morning to continue our work on Senate File House Bill 54, the Workers' Comp Bill. And I'd like to serve notice at this time. We've asked anybody that has proposed amendments for them to get those in, get those done, and to have them available in the committee room so that all the interested parties can get a copy this afternoon. Some of them are already available there, Mr. President, for anybody that's interested.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 to consider the following House bills. House Bill 73, Victims of Crime, Reporting and Notification. House Bill 222, Establishment of Private Roads. And House Bill 231, Motor Vehicle Accidents, Serious Bodily Injury or Death.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Earlier today, Committee number 2 was assigned House Bill 295. And in reviewing it, its primary sponsor is the Speaker of the House. And there's a rule that the JAC doesn't consider bills from the Speaker of the House this week. So I'd like to refer it back to Committee number 9, House Bill 295.
Without objections, House Bill 295 will be referred to Committee 9.
And when you see the Speaker, you can tell him that rule and tell him who said it. Mr. President, the Committee number 2, Appropriations, will be meeting at 1 o'clock today to consider House Bill 240, engrossed, Elected State Officials Benefits. House Bill 144, engrossed, Transparency in Government. We'll be meeting at adjournment to consider House Bill 134, Natural Resources Large Project Funding. House Bill 299, engrossed, School Facilities Budget Process. House Bill 163, engrossed, Physician Assistant School. And House Bill 152, engrossed, Athletic Trainers Licensing. We'll meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. to consider House Bill 97, engrossed, Weights and Measures. House Bill 162, engrossed, State Employees and Retirement Military Credit. And we'll be meeting at 1 p.m. tomorrow to consider House Bill 33, engrossed, Expanded Opportunity Pilot Program. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, Committee number 3, Revenue, will meet at 12:34. Up in S-16, up on the corner, to take up House Bill 283, engrossed, Taxation and Revenue, Digital Products, House Bill 68, engrossed, Property Tax, Homestead Exemption, and House Bill 215, engrossed, Tax Exemption for Renewable Resources.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, will meet tomorrow, Friday, February 20th, 1 p.m. in Senate 5 to discuss the following bills: House Bill 61, engrossed the Revisers Bill; House Bill 127, engrossed obsolete laws and general revisions; and House Bill 160, constituent service allowance. And, Mr. President, if I may, we are just we're taking up at 10 o'clock, 10 o'clock, our normal time, tomorrow morning. So,
you've heard the motion. The Senate shall stand recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate in recess.